as my heir.
He shook his head slowly.
You are not entitled to it, my dear. You've done nothing that would entitle you to it. But if you are submissive and humble, if you bend to my will, your exile from court may not last more than, say, a few years.
Sarah was trembling. She wanted to lash out at him, to decry his hypocrisy and his machinations with Lady Corinne and Lord Wells. But she ruled her tongue and refused to let it run away. Her eyes felt hot, but she didn't cry. Not for Will, not for herself. She would not cry before him.
I see that stubbornness in your eyes,
he said in a low, cruel voice.
How it disappoints me still. You've always been a disappointment to me.
His words drew blood. They always had. But she had learned that nothing she could ever do would please him. He wanted a mindless, obedient puppet that he could forever control, one that would submit to his whims just because he thought to entertain them. Approval was an enticement that most people responded to. Not Sarah, however. I am grateful to hear that the cholera morbus has stopped its work of death, Sarah finally said. Thank the mysteries. Her fingernails dug into her palms, but she hid her fists behind her back, just like Fitzroy. She wouldn't let Father see how much he affected her. Even though the words would be sour in her mouth, she would taste them. And thank you for the opportunity to better myself at Pavenham Sky. I will try to be a good student. Her heart ached with regret, with sadness, and the feeling of vulnerability. She would withstand whatever they had planned for her. She would bend, but she wouldn't break.
Thank the mysteries indeed,
Father replied with a cynical smile.
Pain always leaves scars. Some can be seen by all. Others go unobserved. Those private scars are the most painful. But it is an eternal truth that a burden shared is a burden lifted. Solace comes when another shares our grief, our sadness, our scars. As I look at the scar from where the ball punctured my body, as I feel the lingering agony of that injury, I think of the pain that countless will endure in the conflict ahead. I knew the Emperor would die before the year was out. I had no idea it would lead to war. A new man has tightened his grip on power. If nothing else, history cautions us about power and those who wield it. There is foreboding in my heart about what sort of man our new Emperor is, what he may do. So another school year has come to an end. There are garlands hanging in Vicar's Close to celebrate Whitsun Day. The students will assemble to dance tonight. Families have come from all over the realm to take their sons and daughters away. Many sons will go to their deaths. Many young women will be bereft of husbands. All will bear scars after this night. One does not need to see the future to know this, and to grieve.
Thomas Abraham, Aldermaston of Mirwood Abbey. SETI. Chapter 34. Harbinger. When SETI awoke next to the sentinel tree, she could not remember all that had led to her being there. She remembered the wicked spirit she had banished, but there was something that nagged her mind after that. Something that wouldn't come to her. The memory was masked by the dream she'd had after passing out. It was unlike any dream she had ever had before. For her, dreams had always been snatches of things she'd experienced during the day. Perhaps a fact about birds she'd learned in one of her classes. Or a calculation that Mrs. Romrell had explained. Or they were nightmares from her life in the fells, dark memories of a childhood smothered in shadows. This dream had been more like a vision. She had been standing on a cliff high above a scene, only it wasn't a cliff at all, but a shining sheet of gold high in the air. It was a whirl of translucent particles around her feet that dazzled and dizzied her. Down below, she saw an island jutting out of the waves of the sea. It was a craggy thing, the rocks black and speckled with all manner of life that she could sense from her golden perch. She could sense tiny sea creatures clinging to the rocks just beneath the surface of the crashing waves. They were creatures she'd never seen before, with hard, spiny bodies and strange geometries, yet she saw patterns in their forms. Massive hurricane skyships were moored in the air near the island. They were full of soldiers, men of the Ministry of War, some young, some seasoned. She felt their fear throbbing inside them, and she could name every man present. How could she see so much, know so much, in an instant? It was as if her mind had enlarged. She heard their voices, their murmuring words, the march of steps as they strode the galleyways within the hull. The vision swept her along, and she saw the commander of the fleet poring over a map with his aides. It was a war map, and she saw his finger pointing at a small island off the coast of Dahomey. The point was labeled Dochty Ruins. She sensed the ink blots that formed the words, and for a moment she found herself sucked into them. She heard the whirring gears of the machine that had made the map, smelled the wet ink. Seti pulled herself back, realizing that she could dive into any facet of the scene to learn its true source, its origin. Her mind reeled with the knowledge that flooded into her.
"They'll come through an arch on that side of the island," said the fleet commander gruffly, his gray sideburns twitching with worry. "That is the mirror gate. That is where—"
"Admiral!"
shouted a man who barged into the room suddenly. Seti could feel the fear throbbing inside him. His name was Decker. How could she know that?
"What is it, Captain Decker?"
the commander said angrily.
"You can't barge in. Sir, they're through. They've appeared just beneath us, rising from the waves. We didn't see them cross the portal. They—"
His words were cut off as an explosion rocked the hurricane. Seti was propelled outside the skyship suddenly, and she saw a mass of ships rise from beneath the tidewaters. These were not ships with masts and spars, but sleek metallic vessels, sculpted and angled and covered with runes. Burning orbs flew from strange turrets on the front end of the vessels and struck into the fleet of skyships overhead. Smoke belched from the holes in the hulls. Men fell to their deaths from the gaps, and Seti could only look on in horror. The chaos of battle filled the air as the hurricanes began to maneuver away from the trap that had sprung up beneath them. Seti's attention shifted to the island of rock jutting up from the sea. Around the far side, she saw that part of the island had worn away, opening a gap for the seawater to rush through. It was like a bridge made totally of stone, all craggy and uneven. Years and years of waves hammering against it had created the gap. From that gap, she saw ships sailing in, the traditional kind with sails and masts. It was strange because the ships just appeared in the opening. One moment it was simply sky and water, the next another ship sailed through. It was a fleet of vessels, but the metal ships had come as a surprise. Somehow they had crossed underwater without being seen and had positioned themselves beneath the skyships. They were much larger than the little ones she'd been told the Kishion had used to escape the Abbey. The threat was much worse. Their enemy's inventions had changed. There were half a dozen or so, each firing burning spheres up at the hurricanes and tempests. There was mayhem. There were screams of death. And then she woke up next to the sentinel oak, a twig hurting her cheek. She had no idea how long she had been passed out, but she could smell the scent of sulfur in the air, hear the screams echoing from far away. Then it was gone. Fitzroy arrived the day of the ball, the day before all the students who had completed their study of the mysteries would return home. The celebration was being held at the Aldermaston's Manor, which was open to the public for such an occasion, for it had the largest ballroom. The noise of the crowd intensified as the youths eagerly awaited the orchestra to begin playing. The buzz and whine of the strings brought an air of anticipation to the moment. It was a day that the students looked forward to. But to Seti, it was bittersweet. Fitzroy had taken his family aside upon arriving at the event, and he'd told Seti that Sarah would not be returning to Mirwood. He'd also shared the story of Will Russell's betrayal and her friend's subsequent disgrace. Seti's heart ached for her friend. She wished to tell Fitzroy about her vision, but there were so many people around there wasn't enough privacy. Although Finia was still suffering from the humiliation of failing the test, the ball had certainly improved her attitude. Anna wore a white dress with long white gloves, and her blonde hair was done up in pretty ringlets. She radiated beauty, but there was a wariness to her now, a loss of innocence. Seti had never been comfortable in such fashionable or fancy clothes. Her frock was more simple, the collar tight around her neck. There was nothing immodest about the Fitzroy sisters' dresses, of course, but Seti felt more comfortable with her own choice. Her dress was gray, not white, and very simple and plain. She did not wear gloves deliberately. After the girls wandered off, Finia and Anna because they were summoned by their friends, and Seti because she needed some time alone with her thoughts, Seti noticed Lady Merrin and Fitzroy continued to talk quietly in the corner. Lady Merrin looked worried and concerned and spoke in a low voice to him. Seti knew she could commune with Aleering near them and listen into their conversation, but it felt too intrusive and she wouldn't do it, particularly since her guardian, who already wore his regimentals, was preparing to be deployed the next day. They deserved this time alone. Then she saw Stephen charging toward his parents with a raging look on his face. Adam Cray walked alongside him, much calmer in appearance. She'd rarely seen Stephen so angry, his eyes flashing with hostility. Normally he loved balls, too. Something had surely set him off. Adam slowed when he saw her. He, too, wore a uniform and would be departing for his vessel the next day. Some girls found a military uniform exciting, but it hurt Seti to see him wearing it, knowing that his heart longed to help heal the sick and impoverished. The spread of the disease may have slowed, but there was still no cure.
"Let me catch up with you," Adam told Stephen. "I wanted to talk to Seti."
Stephen, noticing her, flushed and scowled even more.
"You can speak to whomever you wish."
His nostrils flared and he stalked off. Seti felt like she'd done something to offend him.
"What was that all about?"
she asked Adam worriedly. He clasped his hands behind his back and sighed.
"Fitzroy is sending him to Dalkoeth to run the mines."
"What about Sir Jordan?"
Seti wondered. But the answer came to her before he could speak.
"Oh, he used to be in the Ministry of War. He was a captain, I believe. That makes a great deal of sense."
"To everyone except Stephen,"
Adam said wryly, a twinkle in his eye.
"He's offended on many counts. He was expecting to rule Fog Willows in Fitzroy's absence. Instead, he gets sent to the mines. It's dirty work, but it will be good for him. I can relate, though. I don't get a say in where I'll go either."
"Surely the mines will be better than a warship," Seti said.
"Indeed,"
Adam said with a shrug.
"Well, the music is about to start. Anna made me promise to dance with her first, but I hope you will stay around."
Seti felt a shiver of goose flesh go down her arms. It had been many years since she'd danced with Adam, and things had since changed between them, at least for her.
"Yes, I will be here."
"Good. I didn't want you wandering off like you did the other day when we couldn't find you. I looked at all your usual haunts, but you weren't there. Skrelling said he'd spied you heading to the orchard, but you weren't there either."
Seti hadn't shared her experience with anyone. It felt private, something not to be shared lightly.
"You went looking for me?"
"Of course,"
he answered.
"Well, I should give this to you now, before all the commotion starts.
a single piccolo started up, beginning the opening notes of the song Sky Ship's Cook. The tune was as familiar to her as any of the others. It was a lively dance.
Oh?
She asked. From behind his back, Adam brought out a small worn book, one she had seen him studying. It was small enough to fit in her hand.
I don't have much, he said with a sigh. But this one has always been my favorite. It's a book of plants and birds. There are little sketches in it to help identify the different breeds. It's a little shabby, but it means something to me. I wondered if I might give it to you while I'm gone. I've scrawled some notes in the margins. It's silly, I know, but it pained me to have it tossed out as rubbish. Would you keep it for me?
Her throat went tight as he handed it to her. She stared at the little gray binding. The corners bent slightly. Some of the pages were loose. There was something sticking out from the middle of the book. This was something precious to him, and he'd given it to her. As she took it, their fingers touched. I would be honored, she stammered, feeling her cheeks growing very hot.
Thank you, said he. There's Anna. I must go. I'll look for you.
She nodded, giving him a hopeful smile as she watched him hurry to meet Anna. She didn't feel any jealousy as she watched them start to dance. How could she, when she held something so precious in her hands? Then she gazed down at the book and flipped through a few pages. She recognized his handwriting, of course, and could imagine him sitting against a tree, observing a wren in the branches and writing what he saw. The sketches were done well and had different symbols of measurement and facts about the various creatures he'd observed. Oh, it was wonderful. The best of gifts. Poking out from the middle of the book was a sprig of lavender that he'd smashed into the page, flattening it. She brought it to her nose and smelled it, along with the scent of the old pages. For a moment, she thought the floor was spinning. Then she carried the book over to Fitzroy and Lady Marin. Stephen had already stomped off in the distance.
I wish Sarah were here, Ceddie said, glancing at the rows of dancers whooping and clapping in time to the music. She liked this song.
She'll be at Pavenham Sky soon, Fitzroy said. She misses you dearly.
I don't know when I'll see her again, Ceddie sighed. I imagine I wouldn't be very welcome there.
Fitzroy pursed his lips.
Well, there are other places you are more than welcome.
Tell her, Brant, Marin said, nudging him. You've waited too long.
Ceddie looked at them curiously. Fitzroy gave her a tender look.
As you know, I have tried these last 4 years to adopt you. Your deed is paid off, so you have no obligation to anyone. But adoption is another matter, as you know. Sloane and Teitelbaum are still working the case. Even though we aren't your actual parents, we feel as strong of a connection to you as we do to our other children. It pleases us to hear you call us mother and father. Well, I should just get to the point. Ceddie, we've decided to name you the keeper of the House of Fog Willows.
Ceddie stared at them both in shock and surprise. She was only 16. It was unheard of that someone so young be given such a responsibility. It was a position of enormous trust, one that usually had to be proven over years of faithful service.
But Mrs. Harding, Ceddie said, her voice trembling.
Took the position, knowing full well that it would be temporary, Marin said, smiling. And she misses her family very much.
She cupped Ceddie's cheek.
You are incredibly strong with the medium, Ceddie, stronger than I am. And I'll be there to teach you and to help you. Once Brant gives you the key, you will be empowered to act as if you were him. The estate will obey you in all things.
She then linked arms with Fitzroy.
It will be a good experience for you, regardless. A sign to others that you are trusted implicitly. It will raise you in society.
Ceddie's eyes pricked with tears, and she rushed forward and embraced both of them, feeling so grateful for their love and their willingness to defy tradition, feeling so grateful they'd given her a chance again.
She nearly dropped Adam's book, but kept her fingers firm on its binding.
I don't know what to say, Seti said.
Tell us you won't accept Mrs. Romrell's offer to become a governess,
Fitzroy said with a smile.
I told you that I had something else in mind for you. And it will give me peace of mind when I'm away from home.
Seti pulled back, realizing there was another source of Stephen's anger.
Stephen knows.
Merrin glanced at Fitzroy first and then nodded.
He's not pleased. We have tried to teach him that he must earn Fog Willows. It won't just be given to him. We are giving him an opportunity to prove himself elsewhere, and he sees it as an injustice.
She was about to say something else, but stopped and shook her head.
What?
Seti pressed. Fitzroy was about to speak, but Lady Merrin made a gesture to silence him.
She should know, Merrin. He suggested sending you to Dalkoeth instead. It was petty and unjust of him to say that. A few years of real work will be good for that young man. It will temper his character. If he had taken any of the martial classes when he was studying here, beyond the required few, he may have been conscripted too. But poetry and dancing wouldn't serve the Ministry of War very well. He's luckier than he knows.
His eyes trailed off, lost in sad memories.
I will miss you, Father, Seti said, giving him another hug.
He patted her shoulders.
We will also rely on you to keep Stormglasses going. The information they provide will prove essential during a conflict, and you understand them better than anyone. Some will try to steal the idea while I am gone. You must safeguard it.
I will, she promised. We knew we could count on you, Merrin said. We love you, Seti.
Then she looked up at her husband. If they start Jenny's market, you must dance with me. He bowed to his wife, a pleased smile on his mouth. It was one of Seti's favorites, too. She felt the sudden urge to tell them about her experience in the woods. It came as just a little nudge, a little push, the kind she was learning to heed. The song finished and everyone clapped. It was time to exchange partners.
Something happened to me the other day, Seti said as the noise of the room intensified. The day of the test.
She quickly related her experience to them. They looked concerned as she told her story. But then she related her vision of the strange battle she had witnessed off the coast of Dahomey. Fitzroy's eyes widened with surprise at that part. He was stunned by it. Seti bit her lip, gazing at him, wondering why her words had affected him so. He pitched his voice lower, even though there was a ruckus among the cheerful students, as they began to assemble again for another dance.
Seti. There was a battle fought yesterday at the ruins of Dochty Abbey in Dahomey, just like in your vision. It is where one of the mirror gates between the worlds is located. It is a state secret you couldn't have known.
His voice throbbed with concern, with wonderment. He looked at his wife, who looked equally transfixed by the news.
Is she?
Merrin whispered in awe. Fitzroy nodded.
I think she may be.
Someone approached to ask Seti to dance. She turned, her emotions awash with the implications of their unspoken words. But she was eager to dance with Adam. She wanted to spend every moment possible with him before he was gone, before he was taken away on a skyship into battles far away. It was Mr. Skrelling.
If you please, Miss Seti, he asked, extending his hand.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Mirror Gate by Jeff Wheeler, performed by Kate Rudd. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225.
or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.